Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. Yesterday we brought to you a podcast with a couple of guests that you hopefully enjoyed. And today we're going to talk our season preview. Some of you have had some pretty strong reactions to it. And so, Michael, what did you want to talk about now?
I guess what you said in our season preview is just something I can't get over. I mean, Breen pretty much implied that Eric Gordon was not long for New Orleans, and you so coldly put in our season preview that he will not be here in 2 years. And I guess I just don't understand where people are just automatically assuming Gordon's gone. So I need to hear your explanation, sir.
So, I mean, honestly, there's more ways he ends up not being a Hornet than there are ways that he remains a Hornet. So, I mean, we're talking about, I have a feeling, based on just what he's capable of and what this team is made up of right now, he will be definitely in the mix for a top scorer in the league this year. Somebody, as a result, is going to knock his socks off with a deal and get, you know, max deal. I don't know why the Hornets would match a max deal for Eric Gordon at this point. Because you're locking so much of your future up in that one guy. And do you think Eric Gordon is the guy you build a team around?
No, but those guys come along so rarely. Okay, so here's my logic with why. I guess we're already going with this premise of you're saying next summer somebody throws a max deal at Gordon, which for a team that doesn't have his bird rights would only be about 4 years, $58 million. I think that's what Houston tried to throw at Marc Gasol. So it's right around there. 4 years, $58 million. So you're telling me, you know, that offer is right there. The Hornets have a choice of whether or not to match it. I match it in a heartbeat, and I have Gordon. Yeah, maybe I'm overpaying him by $2-3 million a year, but I'm also gonna have two guys, presumably, on rookie contracts and a fairly loaded draft. So let's say the Hornets end up with the fourth and eighth picks or whatever, get two solid players that I'm going to be paying a total of maybe $6 to $7 million next year and beyond, whatever they're worth it. So yeah, I you're gonna somewhere you're gonna have to overpay. I mean, the Clippers just overpaid DeAndre Jordan. In a vacuum, that guy's worth $6-7 million, but Chris Paul is probably worth 30 or 40. I mean, it's just, you can't just go individually by guy. You're going to have stars on your team to compete in the NBA. Is Gordon worth $15 million a year? No, but I'll overpay him $3 million a year if I'm going to underpay other guys.
So, I mean, and I can understand the theory there. I actually, the thing that I dread even more, and this is what I was thinking of when I said that, Gordon has a history of injuries, and I'm extremely worried that this year he'll get hurt at some point. They'll shut him down. He'll only play like half the season, which means he's not going to get a max contract offered to him. And his agent would never, I mean, or him, it just wouldn't make any sense that if you're a player with his talent level, that you would accept like an offer. So say someone come, like the Nets roll over and say, we'll give you $9 million a year, which isn't, you know, a max, but it's a nice deal. He should just take the qualifying offer at that point and see if he can roll off a full year and then just go to whatever team wants to pay him. And that's what I'm actually, that's what I think is more likely to happen than him getting knocked off his feet with a max deal.
Okay, so under your scenario, let's say starting at $9 million a year, or just averaging $9 million a year. So under your scenario, Eric Gordon's agent comes to him with two choices. He says, look, Eric, you've been kind of injury prone, and we never know what could happen. You've got this offer of 4 years, $36 million here that you could sign today, guaranteed, have $36 million in the bank no matter what happens. Or, with your injury history under this premise of yours, you could sign a qualifying offer of $5.1 million, and that's all you'll ever be guaranteed, and just hope that you ride it out and get a better offer next year. Which one do you want to take, Eric? And you say that under that premise, he takes the $5.1 million qualifying offer and just goes for unrestricted free agency.
I think so.
Okay, and then even if all of that happens, he doesn't get won over. He doesn't get won over by Dell Demps and Monty, who, you know, I don't know if you believe this, but I truly believe that if Dell Demps and Monty Williams were in place 3-4 years ago, Chris Paul and David West would still be Hornets. But okay, maybe you don't believe that, and maybe he doesn't get won over by those guys in his 2 years. But the Hornets still have every opportunity that following summer to pay him more than anybody else.
Yeah.
And even with all of these advantages in their favor, you still lean towards Eric Gordon being gone in 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'll just point out, and you could go back and look it up, but since this new system has been in place where essentially you have the rookie contracts for 2 years, followed by team options and qualifying offers, that no team has been unable to keep their star player after their rookie contract ran out. And so this would be the one that kind of breaks the mold. I don't believe it. I think Eric Gordon either signs a nice deal with the Hornets before January 25th, or the Hornets match something next summer. I just think you're... I know we're not millionaires, but I think the difference between 50, 60, 70 million that he's going to have on the table between now and next summer is going to be too tempting to just take a chance with the 5.1 and play it out. But
okay. We'll see.
All right.
I would love it to be true. I would love him to stay.
Okay. But, I mean, it just brings up a bigger question with this whole idea of, is he worth the max contract? I mean, I even see people debating whether or not Kevin Love is worth the max contract, and I think
that's nonsense.
Yeah, but, I mean, I guess it's – but is Kevin Love a franchise player? Is he the number one guy on a title team? I guess we have to kind of – we got to kind of explain what a max contract guy means, because I think a lot of people associate it with the LeBron, the Dwayne Wade, the Kobe Bryants, the guys who are the number one player on a title team, what to you qualifies as a guy who's worthy of a max contract?
I think you're on a title team. Your number one guy and your number two guy are almost definitely worthy of a max contract.
So Jason Terry and Tyson Chandler would be max. One of those two would be max contract worthy.
I mean, picking Dallas of all teams is kind of that's not realistic. Because most teams don't have, $100 million to spend on a roster. I mean, they're the very rare team that has enough money. It can pay all kinds of veterans who get paid a lot of money and have a lot of good players on their team.
Russell Westbrook and...
Russell Westbrook's, I think, a max player.
What about Hakeem Noah?
Hakeem Noah, if he can stay healthy, he's a max player.
He's a max player, okay. So, to you, I mean, I guess just pure value-wise, I brought up when Breen was on with the Clippers, I think Ray Allen is kind of where Eric Gordon is going to fall. Ray Allen was, on some bad teams in Seattle towards the end there. He put up good numbers, and for a while there, he was the only guy. And I think that's what we'll see with Gordon this year. I think we'll see a 26-27-point score. So Ray Allen definitely wasn't a franchise guy in the respect that, he could single-handedly make you a contender. But you say that under your definition, he is – Ray Allen in his prime was a max player.
Right. So, absolutely. Here's the thing. The guys that we're talking about, the franchise players, true franchise players, Chris Paul, Dwight Howard, LeBron – those guys are underpaid with max contracts.
Right.
Really, they are. So the next tier of guys, the guys who are players number 20 through 50 in the league, those guys are probably worth max contracts as well. And you can have two max contracts on a team and still have enough financial wiggle room to be able to maneuver around them and bring in other players to help them out.
So...
I mean, if Eric Gordon, we can talk specifically Eric Gordon if you'd like and what I think of him. I don't think anybody's going to like hearing it, though.
No, go ahead.
So, and this is just me. The more I look at his numbers, the more I study, look at his game and just understand what he brings to the table, the more he becomes more David West to me than... a star player. And I may be incorrect here because, he is 22, so he can turn it. He can still develop because yet another 2 years before he should be hitting his hypothetical max. But right now, as he stands, based on last year's numbers, he gives you efficient scoring at pretty good numbers. But in the NBA... if you are below average in any aspect of the game, somebody else on your team has to pick up the slack. So if you look at him, he is giving, for a shooting guard, he is giving an extra maybe 3 or 4 points per game over 48 minutes at a pretty decent efficient clip. But he is under for rebounding. He's under for assists. Turns the ball over about 30% more than an average shooting guard. He does not block well. He doesn't steal particularly well. He's actually under in almost every single category you can rely on, except for pure scoring, efficient pure scoring.
Can you explain where do you get the under on assists from? Are we talking about assist percentage, assist number? Because for a shooting guard, I thought his assist numbers were pretty good.
So if you look at his raw assist numbers, they're pretty good. But just if you look at an average shooting guard over 48 minutes, he's not far under. I'm not saying he's terrible, but he's 0.3 per 48 minutes under. So I'm not saying we need. I mean, I'm just saying as a sum whole, you have to be able to compensate for him in a bunch of different places. And for me to call him a franchise player or a guaranteed max contract, you got to give me at least another category you're better than the average player at. You got to give me something.
Yeah.
And maybe he is good defense. I have not watched him enough to know if he has any defensive value at all. And if he comes out there and he's a good defender, then everything I just said is nonsense because he's giving you great defense and he's giving you efficient scoring. That is a max player to me. Even unless he's like, you know, not passing the ball ever or ever rebounding the ball. I mean, that's just my take on Eric Gordon right now. And I mean, maybe in 2 years, once he's, you know, reached his max potential, I'll be thinking I was an idiot right now. But right now, I don't see that in him.
I guess. Okay. So would you give any credence to the argument that maybe Eric Gordon isn't a franchise player, maybe not even worth a max player, but that, I guess I would just come right out. What would you say is the weakest position in basketball? If you look across the landscape of the 30 starters, I guess how would you rank each position? Where does shooting guard fall in as far as the relative strength of the NBA? I think we would both say point guard and power forward are one and two in whatever order, right?
If you're just talking about pure production wise, center and power forward aren't too different for me, but yeah, I mean, shooting guard and small forward are the least productive positions in the league in general.
Right. So wouldn't having a top five shooting guard on most nights give you a greater advantage than, I mean, you look at point guards in this league and, I guess I'm just saying the difference between Eric Gordon and Marco Bellinelli is much greater than the difference between Russell Westbrook and George Hill when you start talking about the top end players at one position versus, you know, the below average starters in the league.
And while you can say that, I mean, my problem is I'm actually comparing his production to an average shooting guard's production over 48 minutes. And he's coming up lacking at a lot of places. We can hope that over the next 2 years he continues to develop and we'll get a very good player out of him.
Yeah, I mean the guy just was 22 last season. I'm just hoping you go into the season with an open mind.
I mean, I'm not saying we should get rid of him by any means.
Saying the guy sucks and he's out of town. We haven't even he's played one preseason game.
I didn't say he sucked.
All right. So let's,
I mean, I've never said David West sucked.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. So Hornets 2-0 in the preseason.
Yeah. Right.
Going against a Phoenix team that might be without, their second best player, Marcin Gortat. I guess, as the Hornets go into the season, I think the wins and losses thing is something that I don't think that matters as much as how this team plays and how it sets itself up from the future. What do you kind of want to see from this team going forward that would give you some hope for the upcoming years?
Honestly, I just want to see a lot of Gordon, Aminu. I want Pondexter to get a chance. And I'll be honest, I want to see at least one of our big three veterans shown the door and some young player who may or may not pan out brought in to replace them.
Well, I mean, that might already be on our roster, but what you're saying, if we want Aminu and Pondexter to get some time, it sounds like the logical guy to move is Ariza, right?
Mm-hmm. So, and I think Ariza has some value still somehow in the league, so...
So how do you play that if you're Dell Demps? Do you look to move him now? Do you showcase him at the beginning of the year, hoping that – I mean, let's remember, the last time that Ariza was next to a high-scoring shooting guard in Houston, he looked pretty good after Houston made that Kevin Martin trade. That was statistically his best stretch as a pro. So do you try – to showcase Ariza in these first couple of months and move him at the deadline, or do you just get rid of him now and get Aminu and Pondexter those minutes immediately?
Well, so here's the thing. If I was just in a vacuum, if I was trying to get rid of one of the three veterans if I, you know, didn't really pay attention to who else I wanted to get minutes for, I would probably wanting to be pushing. Well, of course, you'd want to get Okafor out the door because he's got the biggest contract. But I mean, I think he's still a useful player. I'd want Jack to be pushed out the door in favor of, you know, like a Dan Dickow, who maybe might be better than Dan Dickow. But I mean, so Ariza, this is the funny part about this. Last year, I remember distinctly having conversations with you where I'm like, Ariza is not a viable wing player unless you put him next to a shooting guard who can score like crazy. And that's kind of what we got here.
Right.
So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Ariza plays next to him. But, yeah, I mean, it might – I don't think that he should be looking to move Ariza right now. I really think he should be looking for two things now at this point. Any sort of Okafor deal that brings back anything. And, I mean, and here's one thing. We have to look at Okur, who was in his last year of his contract – was just traded to the New Jersey Nets, and all they got for him was a second-round draft pick.
Right.
And so, I mean, Kamen, there's difference. I mean, Kamen is probably better. I mean, health-wise and age-wise, Kamen is a better option than Okur is. But you're not going to get anything amazing for Kamen. And for Okafor, I'm thinking if you can get a first-round pick at the end of the draft from anybody for him, you should take that. And walk away happy.
I think you've been overshooting on Okafor. We've disagreed about this for a year now. Mm-hmm. I think if you could get that second round pick in 2015, you would jump on that for Okafor. I don't think anybody would offer that, especially when he has nearly $15 million owed to him in that first year that the Lux tax really becomes punitive. I don't.
Yeah, but I mean, you keep doing that thing where you're looking at that last year, and most teams, I mean, especially the ones that would be trading for Okafor, they're thinking right now. They're not thinking 3 years from now.
And I don't. And if one of those teams would go after, I think you could get a sizable return for Kamen. I'll throw this trade at you. I was kind of looking at the landscape. I'm trying to think of teams that, you know, have the window of just wanting a rental guy for this year, have the need, and I honestly think you could go to Boston and
Rondo
and propose this trade and get it. Chris Kamen for Jermaine O'Neal, who you buy out, Avery Bradley, a young backup point guard to develop, defensive-minded like Monty likes. And both Boston's 2012 pick and the Clippers' 2012 pick that they have access to. Now, granted, those picks will be somewhere between 20 and 26. They won't be great picks. But I think that you could easily go to Boston and get that for Kamen. Would you take that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's exactly what you should be looking for Kamen.
And I think that's exactly what they'll wind up getting. I don't know if you saw one of our brilliant posters, actually went back, had the time, listened to all the In the Know podcasts, wrote up a little journal article called Mike Stradamus.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I'm telling you right now, that's the deal that's going to go down in the near future. But there's
how much did you pay him to do that?
I didn't even know, to be honest with you. And then I guess I also predicted that we would sell the draft pick or something in there. I don't remember, but. I honestly don't remember saying that, but I get lucky once in a while. But I think you've been overshooting Okafor. I think best case scenario, somehow if we get Toronto drunk, we could trade him for Jose Calderon and just have one less year of a bad deal. But I don't think the Hornets could get anything for Okafor. I really think he's a guy that they might have to amnesty 2 years from now. If they're going to want to get him off the books to go after that big class. But we're getting way too ahead of ourselves. This is the season preview for this year.
Right.
I guess here's my thing with Jarrett Jack, and really my concern with the backup point guard is we keep talking about, okay, Gordon is 22 years old. Farik Aminu is 21. Pondexter is 23. We're talking about developing these young wing guys, but don't those guys need to be developed by having a, you know, an unselfish pass-first point guard who could get them the ball in the right spots, who could run with them, you know, who could kind of get them those easy points that get them going. And my concern with this team is that, you know, I don't want to develop Gordon and Aminu by them playing isolation basketball on the wing. I really think that, you know, they've got to find some way to get some kind of playmaking or pass first point guard on this team, you know, to be able to get them the looks that hopefully they're going to be getting when.
So you're just fixating on that Toronto deal to get Jose Calderon down here, aren't you?
I mean, to me, it makes sense. I mean, other than the fact that they, you know, Jack and Calderon have already played together and that didn't go too well, but no, I mean, do you kind of see that logic or do you agree with it at all that there's got to be, you know, some kind of you know, playmaker put in place to get those guys the ball in the right spots?
So, I mean, no, I don't actually agree with that. I think point guards are valuable when you're in the wide open floor, and I think finding a playmaker who is capable of just getting an offense started, I think Jack can do that, dribble it up and pass it to the right person. I don't think, I mean, Chris Paul's talent was doing a pick and roll. I mean, that was his primary talent, and he was extremely good at playing off of David West and off of Okafor, and then if he had to, finding, you know, Ariza for a terrible shot or Bellinelli for a terrible shot on one night and good shot on another. I mean, I think that you can definitely, and I think Monty's probably capable of this, I would say, put together any sort of offense that doesn't make it revolve around Jack. It can revolve around Gordon initiating the offense, or it can revolve around Landry, which is a little bit of a stretch. But, I mean, you could build an offense that doesn't have to have an awesome point guard.
Or Ariza playing that point forward that we got the privilege.
That would be amazing.
A couple of times last year.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, I personally think I have more faith in this team than you do. But I personally could see this being one of the three or four worst offenses in the NBA.
Oh, I agree 100%. I expect our team to be a top 10 defense. Personnel currently on there, I expect them to be a top 10 defense and a bottom 10 offense. And you're probably closer than bottom 10. It's probably bottom 5.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is I think Gordon could average 26, 27 points on this team. But I think you see all of his percentages come down. I think you see worse shot selection. And I guess I'm just saying, if we're looking to develop these young guys, so when Gordon hits his prime in 2 years and Aminu starts showing some potential combined with the other guys that we add, we're going to want to develop them without bad habits. And I'm just, you know, I'm afraid without a playmaker on this team or a guy that takes that ball handling responsibility off the shoulders of Gordon or, you know, Aminu from dribbling off of his feet, I guess I'm just afraid that these guys are going to pick up bad habits and not really develop as well as they could if there was a real point guard on this team.
Well, I mean, this is where the reliance on Chris Paul has bothered me all, which is going to be painful. I mean, we get people who comment all the time about how, oh, you know, if we just have an offense that didn't rely on Chris Paul so much, our offense would have been better the past few years. But you go up and down this roster, and even including David West, there were not good passers on the Hornets. None of them were really skilled, accomplished passers. West had his moments, but even he wasn't prolific in any way. He was more concerned about finishing. So if you're going to hope, I mean, I don't think just bringing Calderon's enough, but in order to get good passers in general, you kind of have to get, you know, veteran savvy, and that's not the direction we want to go.
Yeah, I mean, unless you could just find, you know, somebody unselfish that's going to tread water that doesn't really lead to wins, or if you give up something monumental for that person, I still think an Okafor for Calderon swap helps in several areas, but I actually don't think Tirana does that. But moving on. So a couple of things since our last podcast. The Hornets have actually added some front court depth to the roster. I guess first one we'll talk about, Jason Smith, 3 years, $7.5 million. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I want to mock it. That's too much. But, it's not horrendously too much. I mean, I think I said I wanted him for 3 years, $6
million. Right.
So, I mean, in the greater scheme of things, that doesn't matter that much over 3 years, another $500,000 a year. I don't think Jason Smith, he's, what did you call him? Was he your elite fifth big man?
Yeah.
Or your elite fourth? I can't remember.
No, he would be one of the top three fifth big men in the league.
Okay. But we're actually relying on him to be one of the top four, of our fourth big men.
Maybe not. Maybe not if our next guy that we're going to talk about
okay. So you think Smith will probably, stay at fifth?
Well, I guess I'll ask you, do you see any room for growth in it? I mean, the guy is just 25 years old. He's another year removed from a pretty significant surgery. He is 7 foot. This will be the second year in a system where he has a coach that has some confidence in him. He knows the system. Is there any way that Jason Smith gets better over the next year or two?
I don't think we're going to – I wouldn't expect a tremendous increase in talent or skill range from Jason Smith. I mean, I think he's going to be exactly what he was, a big man who – he's going to run hard – and rebound and have lots of balls bounce off his hands.
He extends that range. What if he can't add 2 feet to his jumper? And now we're looking at a Ryan Anderson 3-point shooting big. I mean,
that is about the only place I could see him improving. But here's the thing. So I always have my butt. He actually was taking threes when he was in Philly his first couple of years. His true shooting percentage was the exact same as it was last year. I mean, he has pretty much consistently had the exact same number there. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe you might see some minor improvements. If he can start nailing the three, he'll be a much nicer fourth big man option. But I'm not holding my breath for him to be a tremendous asset.
All right. Well, maybe not for Jason Smith, but the next guy actually just press conference today. Gustavo Ayon! What are your thoughts on our new Mexican center, Gustavo Ayon?
I would love to tell you I have thoughts about him. I don't know anything.
Not your international scouting ties have paid off.
I have no information about that guy.
All right. So, we can't really break down his game outside of YouTube highlights and the occasional Draft Express comments. But I guess what does it signal to you that Demps and the front office are out there looking at guys like this, being proactive, beating other teams to the punch for a guy that, at least by some reports other NBA teams were interested in. Do you see some of that San Antonio Spurs culture?
No, absolutely. And I think it's magnificent because I'm firmly in the camp of those people who are like, veteran retreads piss me off.
Yeah.
Players Willie Green is one of them. There are so many players like Juwan Howard. I mean, they keep their jobs because they're good locker room presence. And, maybe 4 years ago, they were serviceable. But they just keep being picked up by teams that are just like, well, this guy has proven he can be on an NBA team. Who the hell cares? This guy is a replacement-level producer. I would 99% of the time prefer you go after a D-League All-Star or some player in Europe who's decent, or in this case, player in Mexico who's decent, and give them a shot than just try to go find some, you know, veteran guy who's been around for, like, David Anderson. I mean, David Anderson was 32.
Or you mean, like, I think the Atlanta Hawks have been listening to the podcast because they did replace Jamal Crawford with Willie Green and Tracy McGrady. I mean, that's straight out of the McNamara playbook right there.
Right. Tracy, those are your two favorite shooting guards in the entire league.
Yeah. No, I'm encouraged by it. I mean, we've seen Dems. We've seen him try. Hasn't really hit yet with a couple of D-League guys, but really active there, active in the international scouting. I mean, I'm not saying that these two are directly related, but if we think back before the lockout, which seems like eons ago, the Hornets did sell their second-round pick to the Knicks for what was reported to be about $750,000. And now here we are, and the, you know, Dem said that they would use that money for basketball reasons. We all kind of rolled their eyes. We said, same old cheap Hornets. And then here we go. The Hornets pay $525,000 to get Ion out of the contract. I mean, to me, I'm kind of looking at this. I'm looking at this guy as our second round pick, you know, and I'll take him over who was available. I think the Knicks took Josh Harrelson or whatever. I'll take a 26-year-old who's had success in a very tough league. I mean, just last year, this guy was the starter for this team, and his backup was number 7 overall pick, Bismack Biyombo.
Yep.
So, I mean, you're talking about a guy who was start. So basically, if you look at it the way I do, the Hornets traded, or with the number 45 pick, took a guy who was starting over the guy who was the number 7 pick. So I like the thought process by Dems. It might work out, it might not. But I kind of like to, you know, I like to see this aggressiveness and this new style of thinking from the Hornets.
I agree entirely. I mean, I look at the roster right now and who we have filled in, you know, spots basically 10 through 15. I love that group of people better than any group of people I've ever seen on a Hornets roster, and I don't know anything about half of them.
True to life, you had to bet on it, you know, whatever, today. What do you really see? What would your guess be for this Hornets team? What's their record at the end of the year?
No, I still say it's 18 wins, but I really honestly believe they're going to be trading a couple of veterans.
All right.
I mean, I think Kamen and at least one other person will be gone halfway through the season, and I think that that's going to break them for the rest of the season and make them not win very much at the end.
All right. Well, I don't know whether to hope that you're right or wrong, but either way, it's an interesting podcast, and we will also be tracking the Timberwolves, so I know I've been joking a lot about it, Hornets fans, but seriously, get your Kevin Love voodoo dolls out. Don't do anything serious to him, you know, that'll last beyond the season. Seems like a nice guy, kind of like his talent and root for him, but that guy goes down, and it's possible we're looking at a number one overall pick, so rooting for that just as hard as I'm rooting for and or against the Hornets on given nights.
All right, so thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know. And we'll have more guests coming up in the near future.
Gustavo!
So, have a good night. Let's have a ball, town, each and every day. You all in the party town. Ain't nothing but a ball.